So what is that we are trying to do? We want to show that correlation functions, when you have a unique ground state with the gap, decay exponentially. To show that they decay exponentially, we want to upper bound them with some exponential decay. Okay? So the object that we want to upper bound with something that hopefully is an exponential is this object. And with these tricks, we transform this object in integrals of the commutator between AP and B. Okay? So basically, this is a way of getting something from the time domain to the space domain. Good. Now, let's see why we think this is good. It's because we have the Lieber-Robinson bounds that has an exponential form, and it would allow us to bound this item. Okay. However, here now we run into a difficulty. So let's see if we together we can see what the difficulty is. So let's look at this in the face. Okay? And let's try to actually bound this object using the Lieber-Robinson bound. Where is the Lieber-Robinson bound will not give us something good. So when is when the Lieber-Robinson bound gives you something that is very small?
Outside the limit.
So for T large, right? So large with respect to something that we, at this point, we don't see yet, but there will be some T such that after that, because of the light cone, then this object is small. However, we are integrating it in the whole range from minus infinity to plus infinity. So we are integrating this object also in a domain where the Lieber-Robinson bound is useless. Okay? So when I take this integral and I only think of the Lieber-Robinson bound for t small, so in that domain, I integrate something, and I don't get something small if I think of the Lieber-Robinson bound. Okay, so one thing that we could do is to say, okay, hold on a second. Imagine that instead of computing this integral, I computed a different integral. So let me get another blackboard. Imagine that I decide to compute something else that I believe can represent the same integral. Okay? Something like this. Imagine that we were so lucky that the actual integral that we were computing was almost the same thing. So let me copy it. So what did I do? I added a Gaussian envelope. You see, I'm doing something very cheap. I am just adding a function, in this product. I'm enveloping in a function that for small t can be small provided that alpha is very large. At the same time, at t large, this is not bothering me because it decays even faster than the Lieber-Robinson bound. Okay? Especially if alpha is large. So I would really like to do that. However, if I do that, I make some mistake, right? Because this is not the object that we are integrating. And let's try to understand where this mistake, you know, this error that we make comes from. Remember, what is the role of this object? Is to act as a filter, right? Is to act as a filter for the negative frequencies. Now we have theta, T or minus theta doesn't matter. We have this object. Let's see what is this thing in the frequency domain. What kind of filter we actually get. The filter that we get, so this is the Fourier transform of a product, so it will be the convolution of the Fourier transforms. This will be equal to 1 over 2 pi theta omega convoluted with the Fourier transform of this, which is this. So if I use this Gaussian envelope, I'm actually changing my filter. And you see that, so my filter was omega. Sorry, my filter was theta of omega. But I'm convoluting it with this Gaussian. So basically what I'm doing is that I am doing something like this. Okay? So this is deforming my filter. And so we know that the Gaussian can be a delta, right? When the variance is very small. If the Gaussian was very, very narrow, if it was a delta, then this would become again this. You see it from this formula. So this happens when alpha is large or small. When is that this Gaussian becomes a delta for alpha large or small?
Small.
Okay. So I have a good filter, right? Because I'm filtering out the negative frequencies when alpha is small. In the limit of alpha going to zero, I have the perfect filter that I wanted. On the other hand, if alpha is very small, this becomes useless. Right? So if alpha is very small, then I still am not bounding this object for small t. So you see, if alpha is too large, then my error is very large. Because if this is a very squat Gaussian, then as a filter, this sucks. And I make a big error, I'm not obtaining my correlation function. If alpha is very small, then I get a good filter. So I am exactly my correlation function. I have exactly my correlation function. But then I cannot bound it. So the hope is, so you see, there is not a trivial way of adding this Gaussian envelope. So the hope is there some range of alpha such that, you know, I make a decent error with my filter, which is small, not ideal, but small. And I make a decent error with my Lieber-Robinson bounds. It's not ideal, but it's still small. So this is what we need to try to see if we can do. Yes?
Why do we need the Gaussian for small t? I didn't quite get that.
Yeah, so you see, we know that for large t, this object is small. We know it from the Lieber-Robinson bounds. For in the small t case, we know nothing about this. So we cannot conclude that it's small. But if t is small and alpha is large enough, then this is small. So this would bound the integral in the small t region. Okay. So the strategy of the proof is this. I will write my correlation function in this way. So I will write it as this object. Okay, so let me be boring here. Let me call this piece I1, the first integral, plus the error that I make when I substitute this with this, which will be, you will see this is a very trivial identity. Let me call this I2. This is a trivial identity, right? I can do that. Wait, am I right? Sorry. This is a very trivial identity. Sorry about that. Right? X is equal to I1 plus X minus I1. I see you guys are perplexed. Okay, let me write it explicitly. So that I'm just rewriting again the same thing. So I'll add 1 over 2 pi here. 1 over 2 pi. This is a of t. I want to show separately that this is small and this is small. Okay? So let's first show that I1 is small. So I1 is small. Let me first write it in English because of Lieber-Robinson bounds plus Gaussian tail. Plus Gaussian envelope. And let me write envelope. Whereas this object is the error due to imperfect filtering of the negative frequencies, right? Okay, so now our proof is broken in two parts. We separately show that this is small, and then that this one is small. Okay. So now forget about this part, let's focus on this one. So we have this integral, I will not write the argument, and we just break it in two parts. We break it in the time domain, positive and negative, smaller than CD, where D is the graph distance between A and B. Okay, so we have a length here, because we are looking at A and B, are two operators with two different supports, and let me call their graph distance D. Plus T larger than CD. So do you agree that I can always break an integral in this way?
Is A a function of time or
D?
And you're saying there's a distance between
A and B.
The supports of this.
No, A and B. It's so. This is A, this is B. I'm trying to bound the correlation functions between A and B in the ground state. Okay? Time appears here in the commutator, and the support of A of T is depending on time and it is expanding, but I'm not computing the correlation functions between A of T and B. I'm computing correlation functions between A at the time zero and B at the time zero. The equal time, the time zero, correlation functions between A and B. So it's a purely spatial thing, right? Where in the ground state, nothing is evolving. I want to know the correlation functions. OK. So I can break it in these two parts. As you can see, C as the dimensions of some speed. That's why I call it C. Okay? It's to be determined, right? Because we need to calibrate, to gauge all these alpha C's, all these things in a way that all the errors become small all at the same time. So I leave it as a parameter, right? Because for every value of C, I can break it in this way. So in here, I will use the Lieb-Robinson bounds. In here, I will use my Gaussian envelope. Okay, so let's do that. Okay. So let me first do the part with the Gaussian envelope. Okay. So T smaller than CD. Okay, so now I'm trying to bound this integral. So we have the absolute value of 1 over 2 pi, this integral, T on the domain of short time. And then we have 0, the commutator between A of T and B, in the ground state, then I have theta or minus t, my Gaussian envelope in dt. So this is the object in absolute value. We want to upper bound it with something small. Okay, so this is smaller than equal of 1/2. I don't remember. OK, let me see. Maybe I have the pi. T smaller than CD. OK. So first of all, I can definitely. So you see, we are at short times. We know that the Lieb-Robinson bounds are not going to help us, right? We know that. So I have no hope of saying that this is small. So I'm not upper bounding it with something small. I'm upper bounding it in a rough way. we know this can be upper bounded by 2 times the norm of this commutator. Sorry, by just the norm of the commutator, which in the end will be 2ab. Yeah?
Isn't it the, if we are small t, we...
At small t, the Lib-Robinson bound is not gonna help me.
But they're time separated in the...
Huh?
There are space like separated in here. So
yeah, so when t, you see, we are inside the light cone. T is smaller than CD.
The point is that A and B started out as having, like, being disjoint. And so for sufficiently small times, they still remain disjoint. And so their commutator would be nearly zero.
When if T is greater than CD. Sorry.
T is sufficiently small, meaning the distance D is greater than T over C.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right. You're right. So, you're right. So, you're right. We are inside a light cone, so it is a large time that we cannot use the. I was confusing myself. Okay, so let me, at, for small times, we are inside the light cone. So this means that if D is greater than T over C, then what is outside of the light cone can be upper bounded. You're absolutely right. Yes. So, okay. So let me take now this Fourier transform of theta minus t. So I will have, where is it? I have a bad reflection. Is psi of delta minus t plus I over t. And this one is upper bounded by the commutator, which we know it will be small. So now I have delta of t, because delta of t or delta minus t is the same thing, plus 1 over pi t, and e to the minus alpha t square in dt. Okay.
Can't use the Lib-Robinson bounds when we are.
I want to use the Lib-Robinson bounds.
When t is small, then we can't use them because.
It's when t is small that I can use it. It's when t is large that I cannot use it.
Why is that?
Because I have this. Right? So when t is small, this is exponentially decaying. And when t is large, that it has spread everywhere and I cannot use it anymore. So this is where Lib-Robinson holds. And this is at large t where the Gaussian tail works.
The one that you wrote above, when we were like discussing that. When t is small, it's close to 1, so it kind of fails.
When t is small, the Gaussian envelope is useless, I agree. But this is small because of the Lib-Robinson bounds. When t is large, this is order 1, and this is useless. But this is small when t is large.
Okay.
Are you perplexed or?
Yeah, I'm not sure because we didn't have. I don't quite see why we're using the Gaussian envelope. And how does it like?
So there is no Gaussian envelope.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me go back to our. Okay. So it's worthwhile to go back to this. Okay. This is the object that I actually want to bound. We know that when t is small, this commutator, look, is decaying exponentially. So for small t with respect to this velocity that I call the c, this will be a small number. However, when t is very large, now this is useless. Okay. So I said, how about we put a Gaussian envelope in our function? Because now, when t is large, okay, then this is gonna kill it. Okay. So now the point is, when is t large? Because this bound is very efficient when t is very small. For t very small, this is not very good. So I can make it very good by taking large alpha. I'm saying we cannot naively take alpha as large as we want, because the error that we make when we add this, because this is not our function. Our function is just this. How do we modify the thing that we're doing when you add this? I said, oh, what we are actually doing is to change the shape of the filter. So this is very efficient at large time when alpha is very large. But if alpha is very, very large, then we make a big error. So if alpha is very small, then this is complete. Imagine alpha is zero. When alpha is zero, I get the perfect filter, but then it's useless, right? Because at large times, I'm not killing it anymore. So I need to find an intermediate alpha that bounds them both, okay? In order to do that, I am separating the two objects. I said, okay, I want to bound this, and then I want to bound the error, okay? Very good. Now, let's bound this. So this can be bounded within, when at small t, by the Lieb-Robinson bound, at large t, by the Gaussian tail. Okay, so now we're doing small t. So this is our object. It has this. It has this, and this is, I know I can upper bound this expectation value by the norm. It's okay because I know the norm is gonna be very small. Okay. Now, for, you see, this is a quantity smaller than one. So I can take a further upper bound, although maybe very weak, if I erase it. So let me do that. Okay. And now, let's take this thing. Okay, so let's make this calculation. So let me first use the Lieb-Robinson bound. So this is smaller or equal than AB and now let me use that form. I also have a 2 that cancels this 2. Maybe here I have 1 over pi. And then we have the integral in t smaller than cd e to the mu bt minus 1 times e to the minus md. And then we have times delta of t plus 1 over pi t in dt. So you see that the contribution of the delta puts t to 0, this is minus 1, t to 0, and this becomes 0. So this gives no contribution. So we are only left with this one. We have e to the mvt minus 1 over pi t integrated. OK? All right, good. So this is the part where t is smaller than cd. It's upper bounded by this object, which is scales with ab. OK, now let's bound this integral. This was minus, right here? Minus mu d. OK, now let's bound this integral. So the integral we are bounding is the integral t smaller than cd of e of mu vt minus 1 over pi t. And so t is always smaller than cd. OK? So as you can see, actually, what I'm doing is that I'm computing the instantaneous average of this thing. So I can upper bound it with the maximum value that I can get. So this should be order of e. So I just substitute, instead of t, I substitute cd. OK, so this would be e to the mu d with a minus 1 minus bc. Let's see if it adds up. OK, so if t is equal to cd, we would have a mu bcd, which is this part, mu bcd. OK. And then I have some prefactors that we don't care about. We just want to know how it scales with these constants, with the d, b, c, etc.
Units, are they OK? Because B and C both have units of speed, right?
C is not speed.
Oh.
Versus
okay. Huh?
I thought C had units of speed.
So this is integrated in a domain that is smaller than CD. So the maximum value of this function is when t is equal to CD. So I'm bounding it in a very stupid way. Okay, and now we have to do the Gaussian tail. So now we have to bound 1 over 2 pi, the integral for t greater now than cd, greater than cd, of the same function, which is the expectation value of our commutator, times the filter, times the Gaussian envelope. Okay, in absolute value. And this will be smaller. Okay, so I have 1 over 2 pi integral in the domain greater than cd e to the minus alpha t squared. And I can always bound. Now I can bound my commutator in a stupid way, like just 2ab. I know that at large times I do not have the Lieber-Robinson bounds. Okay. And okay, so I have this. So now I can use one of my lemmas, because you see I have this formula, this t that is lower bounded by cd. So I can use lemma 1, where my variable e is lower bounded by something that I call delta, and it goes like that object. So this will be upper bounded by AB 1 over 2 pi CD alpha e to the minus alpha C squared D squared. Okay, so it has this order of magnitude times AB, apart from other prefactors. Okay, so you see that I1 is upper bounded by the sum of this thing, so AB multiplying this plus this. Okay. Now let's look at I2, and I will do it on this blackboard, which is the effect of imperfect filter. So I want to say that I2 is small. So to show that I2 is small, I will recompute basically this function. But now I will use another hypothesis. Okay, so let me do that. So let me just compute this object. So now I will write, I will use my that expression for the expectation value of the commutator, the one in that big box over there. Okay? So this is gonna be the sum of on I small, greater or equal to 1 of a0i bi0 1 over 2 pi integral between minus infinity and infinity of e to the minus e, sorry, minus i e i t theta of minus t e to the minus alpha t squared in dt. So this is the first piece. And then we have the second piece that has a minus, indeed. B0i, so ai 0, 1 over 2 pi, integral between minus infinity and plus infinity of e to the minus I minus EI. Let me write like this the part in negative frequency. Theta hat of minus t e to the minus alpha t squared dt. Okay. Okay, so now we need to be careful. Okay? So if the ground state is unique, every time I sum over one, these energies must be different from zero. If I add some degeneracy in the ground state, then some of these objects would be zero. And what I'm going to do is not going to work, OK? But now we use the hypothesis that the ground state is unique. And now we also use the hypothesis that there is a gap, OK? So if there is a gap, means that the energies are greater or equal than a certain delta. So each of these EI is greater than delta. OK? So by using that lemma, we can upper bound this integral, you see? Exactly this integral with 1 plus order e to the minus delta squared over 4 alpha. And this other integral is the same integral, but now these energies are negative. So this means that they are upper bounded by delta. So now I can upper bound this integral by something that has just order of e to the minus delta squared over 4 alpha. OK. So you see, here you have 1. This one, when it picks A0i by A0, it gets you exactly the correlation function that we're looking for. Because remember that I2 is there, is the correlation function minus this integral that I just calculated. So this means that my I2 is upper bounded by just this plus this, right? Because this part is the one that cancels. So it's upper bounded by something of the order of e to the minus delta squared over 4 alpha. OK, great. Because now we are ready to put all the pieces together. And of course, we also have the these A and B that can be further upper bound by the norm. But this is OK because everything has this product of A and B in front. OK? So everything is upper bounded. So in the end, our correlation functions in absolute value are upper bounded by the sum of all the errors. They scale like the product of A and B times all these errors. OK, so the first error is the one due to the Lieb-Robinson bound. That was this one. let's see. This one. Okay. Then we have the error due to the Gaussian tail, which is this one. And finally, the error due to imperfect filter that is given by this one. Okay. So these are all the errors that we have. Now it's time for me to erase this. Now our goal is to find a way of juggling with all these constants, mu, b, c, alpha, and delta, in order to have just one clear bound. Okay. So we want to have the bound in this form. We want to write this bound in this form. So smaller or equal, okay, of A, B, order of E to the minus D over Xi, right? This is our exponential decay. If they are distant more than Xi, they decay exponentially. This is what we would like to obtain. And if I define Xi in this way, so that 1 over Xi delta, let me call it X, then I can write this is the same thing than writing A, B, order of e to the minus x delta d. Okay. Right. Right? Because psi is 1 over x. Sorry, psi delta is 1 over x. Okay. So this is what I want. And I want to extract it from there. Well, this is possible if x delta d, if all the arguments with exponentials are the same, right? So this is true if x delta d is equal to mu d 1 minus dc, and if this is equal to alpha c squared d squared, and if this is equal to delta squared over 4 alpha. Okay. So you see, we have just a system of equations that we need to solve. And you can check that the solution, so these are three equations, and we have these three solutions where alpha is equal delta over d, 1 over 4x, c is equal to 2x, and x is equal 1 over 2v plus delta over mu. So this solves everything, as you can check. And you see that this gives you xi. See, since psi is equal one over the x delta, right? Then this is equal to one over delta of this, which is 2v over delta plus 1 over mu, right? OK. Because v delta and mu are the constants that we cannot choose. Because delta is the gap, that our system has. And v is the Lib Robinson speed in our system. And mu has to do with the graph structure of our system, right? Because mu and v enter the Lib Robinson bounds, and delta is a quantity about the spectrum. So they're all physical quantities. They do depend on our Hamiltonian. So you see that if psi is equal to this, then our correlation functions decay in the way they we want. Okay. So now let's try to understand this result. Who gives us this psi? So first of all, you see that if there is no gap, then this psi diverges. Now, these were all upper bounds. So I'm not saying that if the gap is zero, correlation functions cannot decay. I'm just saying that we cannot prove that they decay. On the other hand, if delta is finite, this piece is finite. OK. So now it depends on this. So we want mu to be not too small. We want mu to be large. OK, what is the role of mu in the Lib Robinson bounds? Remember, you have something that is as this form, e to the mu vt minus d. So mu is the inverse of the lat. Mu is the inverse of the lattice spacing. If mu goes to zero, this means that the lattice spacing is very large. Okay. If the lattice spacing is very large, then causality is violated, right? Because then I can connect everything with everything. You can see it also in the other way around. If the lattice spacing is very small, it's the same thing of saying, oh, I'm looking at the system at large distances, which is what we like. OK? So at large distances, this is finite. In fact, in a continuum limit, this goes to zero. Right? A small means mu very large, and 1 over mu is very small. So this, at large distances, can be neglected, so that the correlation length is, in fact, given by 2v over delta. So this is the sought-after result. So the two key elements were, first of all, the fact that you have a gap. You see how the gap appears in the correlation length. And that the ground state was unique. Okay? Because if I have another ground state, then I have to sum also on this other ground state that has zero energy. And for the thing that has zero energy, there is no gap. So that number would be order one because I cannot bound it. But now we see, and this is the most important part, this. Imagine that I do have a degenerate state. Okay? Because this is the opportunity that we want to have. We want to say that there is a degenerate state, and in spite of that, still the correlation functions decay exponentially. Okay. So I said that if there is a degenerate state, then there would be a term which is A0, let me call I0. I0 is the other state that has the same energy, which is zero. B I zero, times something that I cannot bound. Right? So this is why it fails. Because if there is a degenerate state, then I have this term. Do you agree?
Why is delta zero when there's a degenerate state? So because there's no space in between those.
So I'm saying that the ground state energy is zero. So if there is a degenerate state with a ground state, so in this sum, I also must have that one, right? That comes with an energy zero. And if I don't have this, then I cannot use that bound, and this term is order one. So everything else is bounded and is small, but this term survives. Okay, now you see the way out. Imagine that for every A and B, local, because here it's all about, remember, our correlation functions make sense when A, B are local. Otherwise, none of this works, right? What meaning does the correlation length have if A and B are completely non-local, right? So imagine that we have a ground state of some system such that for every local operator, these matrix elements are zero. So imagine we had a Hamiltonian that has this property. You have a degenerate ground state and a gap above it. And then you have the rest of the spectrum, okay? However, these degenerate states cannot be connected by local operators. Because if I label them by alpha, the matrix elements of any local operator, A alpha B, are zero. Then I can repeat this proof. And for the part in which I'm looking for the matrix elements between the ground state and this, I use this theorem where delta bounds my correlation functions. But then I have the tunneling between zero and the other state. Remember, this is what we do in the quantumizing model. Why do we have a long range order? Because we make a superposition of those two states, that all up and all down. And this state has non, and local operators have non-trivial matrix elements between these two states. In fact, sigma z tunnels from 0 plus 1 to 0 minus 1. Remember? This is all up, all down, and this is the local one. But it's a local operator makes me tunnel between these two superpositions. So you see, in the case of symmetry breaking, you have a local operator that makes you tunnel between the two states. That's why you have a local order parameter and you have a long range order. But I'm saying, imagine that I have states such that when I have 0 plus 1, any local operator, A, on this doesn't never has a component on the orthogonal state. In other words, a local operator cannot connect these different states. Then you would have, at the same time, degeneracy and no long-range order. But definitely, this is not symmetry breaking. Because in symmetry breaking means that there is a local operator that sees the difference between the states. So this would be a new kind of order. And this is what we're going to explore from Friday, and it's called the topological order. Okay? So something weird, because you have the generic ground states, but from the point of view of local operators, they're indistinguishable. That's why it's their difference must be topological if a local operator doesn't see a difference. Right? When if you are on a sphere or on a torus and you want to know the difference, I cannot see it if I look at a patch. It would not be, I would not realize it, right? They look exactly the same. I need to do some non-local operation, so something that has support on a non-local thing, like this ribbon, and then I will see the difference, right? Okay. So from Friday, we'll be constructing a quantum Hamiltonian that has these properties.